go so to
it's,
baking.
It's a little a minute after six, so we're going to call the meeting to order. And Patty's just passing out the cookies. So she's got a lot of jobs. I'm going to call the meeting to order, as I said. This is called a special meeting, so there's no agenda changes at all. So we can't change anything on what we have on what's scheduled here today. So, number two, we're going to talk about the strategic plan, draft review, and discussion. So, I'd like to call on Katie and Jessica to give us a little bit of information. They were what it was like to be on the committee, and then we're going to have Zuria say a few words also, and then wrap it up with Brandy. So, go ahead, ladies. What was the most interesting part? The icebreakers, or what did
you... Icebreakers were great. Is it working?
It is. You have to hold it pretty close to your...
You got to eat the mic, as they say. So I'm Katie Teasdale. I'm the LSC from Buffalo Branch. And I don't know. I guess I really enjoyed being a part of this process and being involved. So I know it was a lot of meetings and a lot of, like, we started with small groups and we worked up to... I'm also on PST, the Patron Services Team, and so kind of working and getting feedback from a variety of staff at different levels as we, like, worked our way through. And I think it's just important to have those frontline staff involved because they're the ones that are going to be really affected by a lot of those changes. So I'm grateful that we got to be a part of it. And I really appreciated, like, the moments. I know we had a lot of discussion towards the end about, like, what goals do we do? How do we decide? How do we measure? And, like, how does those goals then turn around and affect those frontline staff? Because, like, if all of the goals are work that, like, the people on the desk need to do, that's a lot of things. Because I don't even remember, Brandy, how many did we have when we first started that editing? It was like...
There were a lot.
A lot.
We took every good idea and put it on the wall.
Yeah. Yep. So, anyway, it was good to be involved, I think.
Jessica?
Hi, I'm Jessica. I am a library assistant in Cold Spring in Richmond. I was there to represent the DEI team. I think Katie mostly said everything that we did, but we did have quite a few, and we had to make some hard cuts at the end. But I think it was a really good experience to have someone there that was kind of looking at the inclusive perspective of things throughout the process. I did throw a wrench in the plans a couple times, but not very often, so it was very kind. I think that... It was great to see someone at my level doing things, too, because I deal with a lot of the patrons. I'm very, like, you know, what people would consider a librarian when they come into a library. So it was good for me to have that, to say, like, hey, what about this or what about that? Or these are the pieces of future that we see, and it's so hard to predict, but we're doing it. We're trying to and keeping up with the times.
But I think great. Thank you.
Do you guys have any questions for us?
Not at this time, I guess. We'll probably come back to it. Zuria, you want to say a few words about your experience?
I think it was really a wonderful opportunity to see the staff being so invested in it. You know, as a board member, it was a really nice opportunity to mingle around with different staff members and kind of hear their thoughts about what they see from the library, what they hope to get from the library, what do they want to work on. I must say the staff is very passionate about the library, which was really good to see. There was lots of ideas. It was a really good discussions that we had. And it really kind of, I think, turned out well with the stuff that we picked. Like you said, there was too many. And that's good that you have to narrow it down instead of having a problem. But really healthy and good discussion. So,
great. Thank you. And Brandy did a lot of work on that, paring it down. And Jamie did a lot of work on it also. So thank you for that. Have Brandy say a few words about that and how we're going to progress now, when we are going to accept that, or where are we at?
Okay. So tonight we're just presenting it for feedback. If anybody has ideas or wants changes or anything like that. And then at the November board meeting, it will be presented for a vote. And I forgot, Tina, did you want to say anything about being a board member on it? Sorry, not to put you on the spot, but...
I like how you guys ended up narrowing it down and just really kind of simplifying the steps and objectives. And, you know, it just, because we had a lot. had a lot all together, and it was good to throw it all out there. And then, so paring it down, yeah,
right.
It's well done.
Thank you. All right. So we, as a leadership team, decided to keep mission, vision, theory of change, all those things the same. We didn't make changes with that and with the values of exceptional service, forward thinking, and community focus. So what you see on this first page didn't really change a whole lot. What? They did?
Yes, yes. We looked at the document that many times, though. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Bria.
So I've been really worried about what is my gaffe going to be tonight, and I just wanted to get it out of the way as quickly as I could. Brianne, do you want to talk at all about that change?
Yeah, so back when we had our work session and had our separate tables, we ended up brainstorming and rethinking our mission and vision. Before, our mission was explore, learn, connect. And breaking it down, we really established that that's more of a tagline than stating why we exist. And so as you look at both the mission, which is to serve all Central Minnesotans with library collections and services, that is what we do. And short, simple, condensed, our geographical area. And then our vision is very similar to that explore, learn, connect, but with the foster the spirit of exploration, knowledge, and connection for all ages and cultures. Again, this was within the work group as well, expanding off of the mission. And then based on what our goals are, and the vision really is supposed to be the pie in the sky or what we aim for. And so that, again, was through quite a few different sessions as well. And then the theory of change we had established previously.
Thank you, Brianne.
And if I just want to add, I think the lot of it was, you know, to add inclusivity and stuff, mm-hmm. and add everybody and present everybody with the DEI team, and we all work together to kind of make sure that everybody is represented.
Yeah. Thanks, all.
So any questions anything? From the board about it or anything you want to add? Because we're not going to add anymore, are we?
I don't think so.
We don't have any more Post-it notes. We used them all up during right. our sessions.
So we set up the four strategic directions, if you look in. So supporting learning, sharing our story, welcoming all, and growing partnerships. And we tried to, because at the time we were doing this, we did not know who was going to be executive director, and kind of tried to leave space for changes that might happen in our communities, but also really for a new executive director. So it's just chance that the person who is also was part of this. But as a leadership team, I think the way that it's written right now gives us a lot of opportunities to work with our frontline staff, work with folks to try to really come up with more specific objectives underneath those goals and to make it fit where we are right now and keep it fresh and relevant for us.
Questions, comments, and we'll bring that back next month to approve it and
yep.
get it all printed up and out.
All right. Okay. Thanks all.
So number three, temporary Cold Spring Library location. This is an action item. Welcome. Hannah is the city, no, I'm sorry. Chris is the city administrator.
Mm-hmm.
And you are?
I'm the city council.
Okay. So they're going to tell us a little bit about the new space, where they want to put us.
First of all, I'll give you a little history. Can you all hear me?
You have a good voice.
We built the new fire hall.
Oh.
As you know, probably, we built a new fire hall. And we just moved into that fire hall, and our plan was to remodel City Hall to accommodate the police and the city staff. And part of that is going to, our plan, our original plan, or our long-term plan, is that we're going to build a new library. We're continuing on that path. We have the land for it, and the land is paid for, and we have a fundraising group working on fundraising for that. And we need to move the library temporarily because we don't want to have library, the patrons have to walk through a construction zone. It's going to be a major construction change for the entrance, and we don't want kids and people that go to the library regularly to be deterred by that. We want to keep the library open. And so we spent quite a bit of effort trying to find a location that was suitable for that, and we think we did. It's actually the location we found is just a few blocks away. It's up by the clinic. It's between the clinic and the high school. And it's more than twice as much square footage as we have now. It has bathrooms, and we have had the library people come and look at that, all these library experts. And they said that if they make some accommodations to them, that will work. And so they sent us a plan, you know, what they needed to make for changes. Chris and I met with the landlord yesterday. Yeah, whenever it was. Anyway, all these changes can be made, and we're willing to accommodate all of them, no matter what. There's a few technical things we need to talk about in terms of the location of windows and doors and that sort of thing, but none of the ideas are excluded. We have some additional ideas. We need to work out some of those specifics, but primarily we want to let you know what we're doing, and we appreciate the support. We want to keep a library in Cold Spring, and we want to make it nicer. This place, I think, is almost three times square footage of what we have now, and the plan for the new building is going to be bigger yet. So we want to make it right, and we have people that like to use it, and so we want to keep it open. And again, appreciate your support and willing to take us on. Chris, do you have anything to add?
No, that sounds good. Any idea the timeline that will be built, or how long will we be in this temporary space? Any idea?
Well, you know, it's hard to know that because of our fundraising effort. We're going to have to sign a lease probably of 3 years max, and for the temporary, we want to be out of there by then. We'll start construction on the City Hall this spring, so we have to move to this temporary location fairly quickly. In fact, we have to have some time to get it remodeled in order. So we're looking at maybe moving in there February, March of next year. But it's going to take at least a month or more to do the remodel anyway. But the City Council is intending to move ahead with this, and we're going to sign a lease agreement as long as you approve it. We'll sign a lease agreement effective whenever we get the date set. We're still waiting for some legal documents from the owner also and a lease arrangement, but it all seems workable. The council's in agreement with it, and the owner and landlord is in agreement with it. All we need is you guys to be in agreement with it. Okay. There's a lot of people. We want to keep that library open, and so we want to have the time short to have it temporary or to get us in there. It'll be nice. In fact, I think those of you that saw it said it's nicer than what we have now. The temporary location is nice to know what we have now. It's bigger.
Great. Okay. Any questions about that? This is an action item. Okay. Go ahead, Terrell.
I was going to say I'm certainly willing to move approval, although I do have you in here. You were recommending approval. Heard the length of time. Wondering about the security pieces. I mean, I'm guessing that's all going to get worked out, so it's safe to... Yeah, if you don't mind.
All right. It is on. So if you look at the floor plan on the back, this is a medical arts building. So a lot of these rooms are treatment rooms. And so what we are recommending, if you look at that, there are things what we would like to have removed, walls. We're including, we didn't mark out every single door, but the doors look to be solid wood, and so we need to be able to see through them. Thinking about security, right? Sight lines, how can we tell where people are in the library, where they might need help, and where we can maybe ward off some problems. And so we're asking to have the kitchenette either removed or enclosed in some way, several walls taken out. We are also asking for an alarmed crash bar on the back door so that people can't sneak in behind us, and also that way we don't lose any little kiddos that might like to run. Let's see. And we're also asking that the city provide and maintain a camera system with a portable display allowing staff to monitor areas not in their direct sight line. And also that the city relocate existing book drops, shelving, circulation desk, furniture, and other city equipment from the current space. Any questions about the things that we're putting on here?
One of the questions that came up when you talked to the landlord was about the electronic system. Do you have your own internet system, or do we?
We have our own internet, and we've talked with Jay and IT about the process of putting that in there. Brandy, do you remember the specifics of what Jay said about what would be needed to run a city-based camera system?
Sure. So we have in St. Cloud, we have a security system with some cameras from the staff entrance and the dock. And it's an app-based security system, and it works on Great River Wi-Fi, not the staff Wi-Fi, but the public Wi-Fi. And it comes in on, they use a city-provided iPad that's on a stand, so that way staff can leave their desks and go do work in other places that they need to do, but still be able to see if someone is at the staff entrance or the dock or something like that. And so that was kind of what we were thinking. Because of the nature of this building, and sometimes there might only be one staff person working, if someone needs to be shelving or assisting a patron in the very back, if they had some kind of portable device like that, they could still see if someone had come in the entrance or where other people might be, so that they could take it with them around the building.
Well, we're going to do whatever it takes.
Okay.
Great.
We just need to know some of the details.
Yep. And Jay could share with you what he shared with the city of St. Cloud in terms of what we would need with that.
Is there usually just one or two staff working at a time there? Or okay. Yeah. Very small.
Yeah, maximum of two. Maybe an assistant and an aide at the same time. But, yeah, it's a smaller library for sure.
So is the plan to move this back over now to the new city hall when you guys, I guess I'm just.
She asked if the plan was to move the library back to the city hall after the reconstruction.
No. We want to have the new library. We move to the new library.
Okay. The fundraising committee is projecting for us that they're hoping to have the money raised in time to start construction in 28. So that's really only 2 years. And then we're assuming roughly a year construction, hopefully less.
Okay. So that's included in this three.
Yeah. So hopefully in 2029, we'd be able to move into the new building.
Well, this temporary is a good location, but the one we're in with the new library is a better location.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
What is the financial cost for all this, and who will be paying for that, for all the changes that we're talking about making to this building?
She asked, what are the financial costs and who will be paying for these changes?
Well, we haven't worked out all that yet, but it'll either be the city or the landlord. I have kind of the feeling of talking to the landlord that he understands this is the business he's in, and he's had to remodel the building in the past. He didn't say no to not remodel, to paying for the remodel. He's going to pick out the contractor, and if he picks out the contractor, then he's going to pay the bill. So there'll be some additional city costs also, but it'll be tangential to that. You know, it'll be in addition to whatever he does. If there's something extra special that we need to do, like the camera system, we're prepared to pay for the camera system.
Your question? Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. Well, any other questions? Or go back
to
your
motion.
Turn.
Move approval.
Second. First and second. Is there any further discussion on that? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So thank you for your work.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming out tonight. So next we are on to Minitech's director presentation. Very exciting to have Maggie Snow here with us.
Yes.
So we are going to dim the lights a little bit so you can see the background. So it'll just be a little dark here. Maggie's going to introduce herself and her background.
Can you hear me okay?
All the wonderful things she's doing for us.
Yeah. I am Maggie Snow. I am the director of Minitech's, and I am delighted to be here with you today. Very exciting to see all this energy around new libraries. This is that's good stuff. So thank you for supporting that. But that's not what I'm here to talk to you about. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about the history of Minitech's, some of our services, and then how we work very closely with the Great River Regional Library and how the participation of the Great River Regional Library helps make Minitech's a success. It's very quiet.
Is that microphone on? Is this something? We're going to get the door shut.
Nope. Oh, okay.
They're going to close the door. We'll see if that helps.
Okay. I will keep going. We'll see if the...
Yes.
If,
can all you right. hear back there? Okay.
So you were just talking about mission, vision, and values. The mission of Minitech's is to support libraries, cultural institutions, and the communities they serve. So you may not have heard of Minitech's before, and that's okay, because our mission is to serve the libraries, not necessarily the general public, but we understand at the end of every request that we get is the general public. So so our focus is on libraries and cultural heritage organizations like museums and county historical societies. So we have four primary strategic initiatives to connect people to information. I need to turn off the light. Connect people to information, connect people to lifelong learning, connect people to resources, and connect people to people. I will not give you a pop quiz of what Minitech stands for. I will just tell you it stands for the Minnesota Interlibrary Teletype Experiment. So in 1968, back before fax machines, there were teletype machines, and the experiment was to put them in 12 libraries across the state to see about how we could make sharing resources available. So at that time, probably three-quarters of the state's library resources were in the Twin Cities, and so the idea was to share those out with Greater Minnesota. So these 12 libraries were the initial libraries, and over 50 years later, we are still serving more than that even. So it proved so successful, this experiment, that in 1971, the state started to fund Minitech services under what is now the Office of Higher Education. So we now reach every county in the state of Minnesota. So whether you live in Minneapolis, population 450,500, or Hangard Township, population 5, you have the same access to library resources regardless of where you are. We also have interstate agreements with North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. So while there's about 14 million resources here in the state of Minnesota, library resources, our reach extends even further with our friends in the Dakotas and Wisconsin. As I said, we are primarily a program of the Office of Higher Education. They are our main funder. About 45% of our funding comes from the state through the Office of Higher Education. We also receive grants from the State Library Services. So I know you all talked about Minitech's earlier this year when there was a threat of losing federal funding. So that the $2.38 million is primarily the federal funding coming through State Library Services as LSTA grants. That's about 20% of our funding, depending on how you slice and dice it. At this point, we have not lost that funding. Our funding is still stable for this current fiscal year. As you know, the federal government is currently not working, but if they were, they might pass a budget that does include IMLS funding, or if they pass a continuing resolution that also includes IMLS funding at this time. So so a glimmer of hope that the funding continues to remain stable. We do receive some legacy funding through the Minnesota Historical Society, and that's specifically for our Minnesota Digital Library, which I'll talk about in just a minute. And then we have contract revenues with the Dakotas, as I mentioned before. So those are interstate agreements. The Dakotas are funding their portion of the resource sharing that we do with them. And then we have some reserves that we have started. We have been spending down, and we are going to be continuing to spend down. We have always... So Minitex has been around for over 50 years. We've always had some reserves that were always kind of labeled shutdown, emergency shutdown. And so we started tapping those over the last couple of years as funding became a little more questionable. Our primary expenses are for the interlibrary loan and courier system that we operate. Also the databases, so I'll go over this in a little bit, but we hold the contract to about 50-plus statewide databases, and so that takes a large portion of our budget. We've got outreach and instruction staff who work with librarians and library staff across the state on using those resources and interlibrary loan and the e-resources. Then the Minnesota Digital Library again, and then we've got a small amount for administration and our IT team. Like any good organization, we have a lot of committees, including a policy advisory council. So every library in the state of Minnesota is represented on that council in some way, including the regional library systems, public library systems, and the academics and the government systems. And there's a K-12 person, too. And then there's representation from North Dakota and South Dakota. So the Minnesota Digital Library is a collection of over 60,000 items at this time from 210 cultural heritage organizations across the state, including 17 within the Great River Regional Library system and including the Great River Regional Library itself. So I encourage you to go take a look at that. What our staff do is help organizations digitize their materials and make them available on the Internet through the Minnesota Digital Library. So organizations will... send their collections to us. We digitize it for them at no cost. We keep the digital copy and send a digital copy and the original copies back to the organizations. eLibrary Minnesota is our collection of statewide databases. So again, there's over 50 databases that are available to everyone in the state of Minnesota. Those are geolocated, so you just have to be standing in the state of Minnesota and you have access to those resources. Last year they were searched about 55 million times and primarily used by K-12 and academic libraries, but they're open to everybody. This past year, we were able to add nursing resources. So to support the academic libraries and the health community in Minnesota, we now have two different databases specifically for nursing resources. Ask Min is a 24/7 reference cooperative of which Great River Regional Library participates in. So this is available, again, to everybody in the state of Minnesota. Whenever you have that burning research question, you can hop on to Ask Min and somebody will answer that for you. So this is a cooperative among the state of Minnesota, but we are participants in a greater cooperative as well that's includes librarians in Europe, includes librarians across the United States. So last year for Minnesota, Minnesotans asked about 30,000 reference questions through that, and just a very popular service. So MinLink is probably the best-known resource in Minitex. This is our interlibrary loan service, primarily for the public libraries. Academic libraries use a different system. So MinLink is statewide, again, available to everybody in the state of Minnesota. And then we have an extensive courier system that can get resources on an average turnaround time of about 2 days to about 500 locations within the state of Minnesota. We also do a daily run to South Dakota and North Dakota. So this is my favorite picture related to book delivery, although it's not from Great River Regional Library. So I put in a gratuitous bookmobile shot for you all. We also have an extensive cooperative purchasing program for both library products and for e-resources. So the e-resources are primarily used by academic libraries, but through these two programs, we save libraries between $3 and $4 million a year. So our team does the negotiation of prices and makes those available to the library staff across the state. And then we have eBooks Minnesota, which is a shared collection of eBooks. this started, most of the books, because of negotiations many years ago, are perpetual access. You don't need to check them out. You can just log in and to start reading books. It's very heavily populated with K-12 resources, but there are resources for everybody. Right now, there's just under 10,000 items in that collection. So it's a nice way to augment the collections here for Great River. Finally, our staff do a lot of professional development. So last year we did 58 different programs for library staff, all AI all the time, it felt like. That's what everybody's talking about, right? But we also did cataloging, training on the eLibrary of Minnesota, and new to us was a consumer health information cohort. So we started this it's a specialization program for library staff. It's open to anybody who wants to do it. You don't have to be part of the cohort to participate, but we have 17 library staff from across the state who are working their way through that specialization program. And that is, again, a library response to a community need. We recognize that healthcare is can be confusing, that the people trust library staff. There's a lot of misinformation, a lot of disinformation. So having some specialized staff go through that training, I think, is a real benefit. And again, that's still, it's open to everybody who wants to participate in that. This is hot off the press as of this afternoon. So we have been working, because we've been talking so much about the value and the purpose of Minitech services over this last year with the funding issues, we have put together a new data dashboard for librarians. So tomorrow Brandy will be getting an email telling her that she has access now to this fabulous dashboard, specialized for each library location. So for Great River Regional Library, we have the MinLink statistics for your borrowing and lending. Here is last year's Ask Min statistics. So we've calculated this based on an average time of answering a question of about 15 minutes, because when you're on an online chat, it takes a little bit longer to get those questions answered. So we've calculated as a time savings for Great River Regional Library staff of 106 hours based on the questions that your patrons answered and the questions your patrons asked and the questions that got answered. I might argue that this might seem like 106 hours of staff savings. You could also argue it's additional 106 hours of access for your patrons. Lots of time and energy, but this gives them, again, access to an information professional 24/7. Our eLibrary Minnesota, so the statewide databases that we have, based on some of our calculations, that's a cost avoidance of about $1 million for the Great River Regional Library. So if you were to contract with all of the vendors for those resources independent of Minitex, we estimate that it would cost about $1 million. So there's a lot of value in participating in the network and a lot of value that that your patrons and your residents get because of Great River's participation in Minitex. And that's all I had. So questions or comments or anything that I can try to answer for you?
Questions for Maggie? Sounds like a wonderful service you're giving us.
I just had a question. I have used this for interlibrary loan for some things that my father, who used to visit me and wanted really weird books that nobody had. And I've had an amazing experience with Minitrex, getting books from anywhere from Washington, D.C. to Hawaii to, I mean, well, that would be not Minnesota, but the other system. My question is that service far and wide well known to our patrons?
I think so. Are you asking me or Maggie?
both of you to answer. I mean, is that a common known thing that you can request books that are not at this library from other libraries?
I think it might not be said, well, Minitex can get that for you, or let's look through MinLink. It's probably said, we'll try to get that for you. Yeah. Jamie's nodding her head. Mm-hmm. Yep. We may not have it here, but let me see if we can get it for you. And so it's just kind of a seamless thing, but I don't know. We haven't really advertised it much through Minitex, but I will note that so MinLink is just one of the interlibrary loan systems for Minnesota. Minitex actually is part of 6 or 7 different interlibrary loan systems. So if it's not in MinLink, we can still request it from other places that might have it. So we take MinLink requests and put them into other systems, and we have a fairly successful fill rate for that. But to your point, though, we've been talking about how can Minitex talk about interlibrary loan services that the libraries have and help promote those services. And so we've got some ideas in mind for over this next year of how to keep information in front of the public. And just as an aside, one of the things, this is my personal mission here, is to streamline the reciprocal borrowing that's around the state as well. So you may not know about that either, but your library card works in almost every library in the state of Minnesota. And then Minitex's Courier, so you can check out something in Worthington, return it here to Great River, and Minitex Courier gets it back to Worthington for you. So, and I think that is really a powerful thing that Minnesotans have access to, and they probably don't know it. And so to your question, a lot of people might not know it, but it's time to start celebrating that. Yep.
Any other questions, comments from Maggie? Oh, go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. First of all, I really appreciate the work you do, and I do think that our library staff does a really good job of helping patrons when they need something. They might not say it's through Minitex, but they definitely get it. And just from talking with friends of mine who don't live in Minnesota, I think that one thing to remember is that we really do have kind of a special interlibrary loan system here that is not necessarily that common throughout the United States. And it's something to be celebrated, I think, that really helps our patrons.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would second that even working with North Dakota and South Dakota, they do not have the extensive delivery system that we have. So they are limited. Many of the smaller libraries are limited on what they will loan or what they will ask for, because they are responsible then for the mailing of that and the return mailing of that. And yeah, so it is a real gem here in Minnesota that is not necessarily replicated across the United States.
Other comments? None, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming out. And you're located, basically your building is downtown Minneapolis or at the U?
Our office is located at Wilson Library at the University. Yep, yep. Most of the things that we send out are from the university. So we're located there, and we've got our delivery system there too.
Great, thank you. All right. Next, we have the Big Lake Library update. That's just going to be a very short verbal.
Yep. Jeanette's going to share that.
Good evening. I'm Jeanette Burkhart. I'm the Patron Services Supervisor for the Big Lake Library. Just briefly wanted to let you know that the City of Big Lake has reached out to Great River to discuss the possible relocation of the current library building into a new City Hall Police Department building. And right now we are just working with the city to verify the square footage of the existing building before moving forward. Okay. That's it.
That's it. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. We'll look for updates on that again soon. Number 6, Minnesota Library Association. 2026. Legislative priorities, page 9 in your packet. Brandy, you want to address that? Anything?
Actually, the people who actually know what they're talking about are going to do that, and okay. That's going to be Jamie and Karen.
Oh, all right. Hey, they just showed up over there.
And Maggie.
Yeah, we still have Maggie here, and yeah, she's very much a part of this as well.
Okay, go ahead.
So on pages 9 and 10, 9 of your packet, we detailed the Minnesota Library Association's 2026 priorities. Essentially, in 2026, it is mainly a policy and bonding year at the Capitol. So we are looking at some improvements to the capital investment bill, which is now known as the Mary C. Murphy Library Construction Grant Program. This is the program that provides for matching funds. Cities such as Kimball and Howard Lake have benefited, Staples as well, from this program. So you apply, it's administered through MDE, the Minnesota Department of Education. It's a wonderful, wonderful program, but currently there is a grant cap, and there are some expensive B3 guidelines that folks need to follow if they're going to apply for these funds, and that can be limiting. So we are looking for just some improvements policy-wise for what can be done. In the Education Finance Committee, we are going to be seeking $2.8 million, and we just heard about all of the wonderful things that Minitex provides. Interlibrary loan is primarily funded through federal dollars, and if those are lost, we need a contingency plan, or we're seeking that. So these funds would be intended to help out in the anticipated federal funding loss in terms of resource sharing, which is the MinLink system, interlibrary loan, eLibrary Minnesota instruction, as well as the Minnesota Braille and Talking Book Library. There's also competitive grants offered through the LSTA, Library Services and Technology Act, that have been administered through the Minnesota Department of Education. We received one of those grants in 2018 to revise our job descriptions, for example. So it's really important to keep those types of funds available for furthering different sorts of library activity that aren't necessary, that might be a little more innovative, that we couldn't do alone. Is there anything that you would add, Maggie, about the ask for Minitex? Okay. Again, with raising awareness in the Higher Education Committee, we're going to be seeking an informational hearing so that we can highlight all of the wonderful services that Minitex provides. At Great River, we actually tend to just make things as seamless as possible for our patrons. So if you've submitted a title request asking us to buy something that we don't currently own, if we don't purchase that, we evaluate, is it better for us to purchase it, or do we refer it to interlibrary loan? So you might suddenly receive something, whether it's from a different library in Minnesota, or if we can't get it in Minnesota, we'll go to our OCLC partners in Hawaii or Washington, D.C., for example. So we don't tell that story as well as we can. So again, with Maggie and Minitex staff, we will be highlighting, if you are a power user, maybe we'll need you at the Capitol to help testify. We'll talk more about this next, but there is a Minnesota Library Association task force that is exploring legislation around ebooks. So we're really seeking to make ebook pricing more equitable, allowing for interlibrary loan, for example, which is not currently permissible with e-materials. We're in the process of exploring that. And so we did include the text of the Connecticut bill that was recently passed. Connecticut is looking for partners. So we're at the Minnesota Library Association just currently exploring what it would take to create our own type of legislation that would allow for, it would basically prevent libraries from entering into contracts with negative terms. So if you have questions on that, we can address those. And last, we will be supporting legislation related to local government units being able to choose whether or not dangerous weapons are allowed in public buildings such as libraries. So I think that covers the high points. I don't think we currently have a date set for Library Legislative Day, but it's a very fun day at the Capitol. Would love for anyone to join. I have done it for many years, and it's always a blast. So,
what month is that usually in when you guys?
Typically February.
February, okay.
There is a date. I just don't have it off the top of my head. Karen is looking.
Go ahead.
I was going to say while Karen's looking, because that would be good to have on our calendars. I don't know how much more you know about the e-commerce one. If it drags our meeting down too much, we could talk later. I'm partially trying to figure out how much can a state actually do, and prohibiting libraries from entering into certain contracts seems like a very interesting way of approaching it, as opposed to requiring access for libraries. So I'm interested in more. I don't want to bog things down unless others are interested too.
Do you want to speak to that, Maggie?
So there has been legislation passed from various states, including Maryland, that was focusing on the publishers and their limiting of libraries and what libraries can do with their ebook collections. That was taken to court and because of copyright issues, didn't hold up. So Connecticut has taken a different tact. Because the publisher, they're in a place now where they've tried to talk with the publishers, they've tried to negotiate, and the publishers just aren't moving the needle at all. So they didn't necessarily want to take this tact, but they did. And one of the things that we have been talking about in the task force is, so the bill passed in Connecticut, but because of this trigger, the trigger is that it doesn't take effect in Connecticut until another state or group of states totaling a population of 7 million pass something similar. So it's already been introduced in New Jersey. There are some other states who are looking at it, but it hasn't passed anywhere else yet.
So the thought is, if you get to a critical number of libraries, the companies basically will get forced into changing their terms, because otherwise they're going to lose it.
Right.
And it's just too complicated to get each library system to say, yep, we're not going to do this. They feel like it needs to be a law change.
Yes.
Yes.
Because we always love it when legislators tell us what we have to do or can't do. Okay.
Right.
Sometimes that's what you need, though.
It is a complicated thing, and I think the amount of time and energy and funding that libraries put into their e-resources collections to have it to have publishers and providers not necessarily take into account the issues around that, I think is a real challenge. And I don't know if since you are a collections person,
that makes sense.
I had a question, Jamie. So when you have multiple copies of an ebook available for people to get, you have multiple copies of a physical book that people can get. Cost-wise, when you are requesting 10 copies of an ebook versus 10 copies of a hard copy book that you can keep lending, are they comparable, or is there a significant price difference between the two?
There's an astronomical price difference.
E-book being more expensive?
Correct. E-books are more expensive, and e-audiobooks are even more expensive.
Still more expensive, huh?
What's that?
The paper and, you know, the cost of printing and everything else.
Right. It's significantly more expensive. I don't have the print numbers in front of me, but there is a resource called Readers First, and they have done studies on the factors. It's often 2 to 3 times more expensive. And the consumer market for ebooks, it's cheaper for you as an individual to purchase an ebook than it is for libraries. In addition, there's also time restrictions on the number of times, the number of lens we can issue, as well as the length of time we get to keep that item in the collection versus a physical book. Based on the right of first sale, we get to keep lending that over and over and over again until we choose not to or it falls apart. So 71% of what we've purchased this year will expire.
Yikes.
Yes. And so there's this tension between the demand, like our patrons really want digital materials, but it's hard for libraries to invest that amount of money on materials that we're renting it, essentially. Mm-hmm. We don't get to keep them. So this legislation is seeking to put pressure on the publishers to adopt better terms of licensing for libraries.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the date yet, but we will get you the date. It is in February.
I just had a quick question about the legislation too. This seems like it would be better coming as a federal legislative initiative. Is there any movement on that at all, or is it mostly state?
I don't think that there's an appetite with the current administration. I don't know, Maggie, if there's something that you'd like to say to that.
The American Library Association has for many years been negotiating with the publishers to try to remedy this, and it's not working. I think part of the idea with Connecticut's initiative was that if 12 or more states could adopt something like this, that gives the libraries then even more leverage on a federal level.
Thank you.
Something significant to note as well is that the MELSA system is actually the largest consortium, meaning they have the highest level of activity of digital lending in the world. And so if Minnesota drops out, that is really going to apply some pressure, because the aggregators, like Overdrive, for example, want that business as well. So it's definitely strategic, but it's the best lever we have right now.
Any other comments, questions? A lot of work to be done, it sounds like. And you drive a car full of about as many people that can go down to the Capitol?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have multiple vehicles. We've got a caravan, so, you know.
We have a new van, too, don't we? Don't we buy a new van?
It's got I would be overjoyed to bring as many people as we can.
Okay. Thank you.
One more question.
Okay. Yeah,
Do you really think that as publicly funded public entities, these libraries, basically, public spaces, it's best to enter into a constitutional conflict by attempting to limit people's Second Amendment rights in the basis of absolutely zero evidence that this makes any sense? I mean, it was a hard-fought thing in this state to get public areas open to permitted carry.
Oh, you moved on to the next one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm thinking that this is related to the public safety element. So I might lean on Karen for this, but it is a local option. It is not legislation that libraries are exclusively carrying on their own, but the Library Association as itself is supporting other legislation that is moving forward from other bodies or other agencies, I should say. It's not something that we are carrying, and we are not asking. The library community felt very strongly that it needed to be an opt-in. So we are not making any recommendations that it's a complete no, we want to ban guns or weapons in libraries. It is an option for different municipalities to explore that.
That would require changing state law, though.
Yeah, it would carve out a new exclusion to that law, because right now there are schools and court buildings, I think, are intentionally excluded. And some libraries are in shared county facilities down in Hennepin, which you probably are aware of, that because they're the nature of the building, they're able to do more than some other libraries. But what started this is an actual incident that happened down in St. Paul. And so there's a lot of strong feelings about this in the library community, particularly down in the metro area, as a result of some of the incidents that have happened down there. We, as a library community, have had really tough discussions about that, because we recognize that greater Minnesota has different sensibilities about open carry or concealed carry than what the metro area does. And so that's why the legislation is actually, or the proposal here for the MLA platform, it is worded the way it is. It started out with a conversation about carving out that exclusion across the entire state, but greater Minnesota voices said, you know, if you want to do this in the cities, that's fine, but this might not make sense out in greater Minnesota, and we should have the right to make that decision at the local level. So that's why the legislation, or the proposed statement there, is actually worded the way it is.
Thank you.
But that's just, that's a big fight.
Yep. Yeah, I was one of those voices. Having been to the Wright County Library.
I would be lobbying against it.
Well, I think it was before Tina was elected, but we went to present on library usage at Wright County, and it was at the same day that the room was filled with Second Amendment supporters in that county room. So we had a great audience who were very big library card fans, but it was very clear that, you know, concealed carry, Second Amendment rights ring differently out in greater Minnesota than what they do in St. Paul.
So I'm sorry, I have one more question.
Go ahead,
back to the commerce one, unless you had anything else.
No.
Okay. Do you have authors? Do we have authors already?
I don't believe at this time. We're still very much exploring to make sure that this is something that the entire library community can support. And we are working with our lobbyist, the Minnesota Library Association's lobbyist, Sam Walseth at Capitol Hill Associates.
That's, I was going to ask you if Sam was okay.
Yep, Sam is helping, and Rob Eklund has joined his team, and so he will be helping us out. He was at our meeting today.
Rob's a former county commissioner. He's pretty awesome, if you don't know him.
Yeah, and thanks to the librarians around, we do have a date. It is Wednesday, February 25th for Library Legislative Day. Thank you to Maggie. 8:30 to 3:30. So the bus will be leaving, so to speak, here bright and early, but you're also welcome to meet us down at the Capitol. It's always a fun day, and we have a lot of territory to cover. So
if you go, you'll have to try to beat Lee Lansmeyer's record. I think we had 23 visits in one day.
I was going to say, he probably, Madam Chair, I bet he would be more than happy to come if he's given an invitation.
Get the band back together.
Great. Any other questions, comments? Okay. We'll move on to number 7. Digital materials legislation update, page 11. Did you already cover some of that?
I think that the conversations blended together.
Okay, yeah.
We did include the text of the Connecticut legislation. Right now, we're definitely working with our colleagues at CHA, Capitol Hill Associates, to determine what we're going to potentially have the Senate, I forget their exact name, but there are folks who work on the legislation and get bills drafted. We want to make sure that it's in alignment with the priorities of the Minnesota Library Association. So it's in progress, but if you have questions about the legislation or ideas on how to approach it, or, you know, what strikes you as this is confusing, please let us know. Let me know, and I can pass it on to the task force because I am a member of that. So.
Madam Chair, I just have a comment. So I feel really guilty right now because I have done this many times where I've requested e-books and I get a notification that they're here and, you know, I've kind of clicked on it and then time goes by and I forget about it and they just sort of... Do patrons know that there is a cost to requesting a book that whether they read it or not, the library is paying or
We could do a better job at that. And so maybe Brianne and I will chat. We are going to be featuring Libby and Overdrive as our database highlight for November. Okay. One of the things you can do is definitely suspend. You can suspend your requests just like you can with our physical materials on Overdrive. It will save your place in line. And when you are ready for it, you can unsuspend it and it will come to you next. You can also return your materials early. So if you finish something, there is a little button within Libby that allows you to return early.
That
so,
I've done.
Okay.
That
Yay.
I've done.
Gold
but
star. Thank
times
you.
When I get it and I'm just like, I got the notification. It sits there for 6 weeks. I don't read it. I don't do anything. And it just automatically goes back. Now I'm feeling guilty that the library paid some money for that, which
right.
I did not utilize.
Yes. So, again, I think sometimes libraries err on the side of making things as easy as possible for patrons, and we could do more to educate folks.
Okay.
So we'll look at ways that we can raise awareness. Thank you for the questions,
Aria.
Thank you. Tell your friends.
Okay. Well, we just saved the library a lot of money there.
For me, definitely.
So, any other further questions? Sounds like we got it all. Thank you so much. Number 8, annual financial designations update. This is an action item. We want to put Brandy on the payroll. Is that to sign checks and things? So, Brandy, you want to say a few words about that before you vote on that?
Sure. So this is a requested action to approve this, and it's basically doing a couple of different things. It's updating our financial designations. So if you look on page 19, the big changes, as Amy explained, were in B. So Old National Bank was Bremer. Now they're Old National Bank, so we have to update that name. Back in July of this year, the board approved using Eller's Public Finance Advisors. And so this, based on that previous approval, this adds them to our designation of approved depositories. And then under C, we have the letter of credit, and that is on the next page to just update the board, and so that the board can accept that so we can move ahead. And then finally, for letter D, we're updating the designations of authorized account signers, so who can actually is authorized to sign the bills to pay them. And we've removed Karen, and we need to add me. And so that is basically what we need you all to do so that we can continue the work of paying our bills and taking care of the public's funds.
In a nutshell. Yes, sounds so simple. Any questions about the financial updates?
Madam Chair, I move a motion to accept that.
And I'll second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
She's on the payroll. Get that automatic signature on there, right?
Yeah.
Next, we have the third quarter strategic plan. Objectives and key results. Brandy, you want to take a little bit about that?
Actually, Karen is all prepped to do that.
All right.
Yeah, I said I'd do it one last time.
Did you pass that to Brandy, though?
I'll do it next time.
Yeah.
You need to get that rolled over onto her computer.
Page 25 is where that starts. It's the quarter three stuff. We moved it into the October meeting, so you'd have a little less to look at in November. You can see that our borrower account has continued to grow for 2025. We have not yet hit 100,000 borrowers. We thought maybe at the beginning of the year we were on track to do that, but we went from 3% growth to less than 1% growth this year. So that has stalled out a little bit. We have 15 libraries that are still up over last year, which is still significant. And, you know, you can still see St. Michael leading the pack there. So, you know, nothing new in the area of St. Michael other than they continue to grow faster than everyone else. But on the next page, you can kind of see why. This is the quarter three borrowers, the new borrowers. So somebody who got a new card year over year. And you can see we actually registered fewer people for new cards in quarter three 2025 than we did in quarter three 2024. So we are seeing that stabilize a little bit. I'm not sure what to read from that other than, you know, the pandemic rebound we've probably hit the top of. Now anything that we do will need to be something new, innovative, and hopefully the new strategic plan priorities will lead us in those directions. The next page that's worth looking at is page 2029 in my book. You know, you can see the month-to-month stuff, but the end of quarter three is September. And we have 13 libraries that have circulated more physical items than a year ago. The digital library continues to outpace every other library, except for maybe Howard Lake there, who has a really nice new building. The overdrive circulation has not paced the same as last year, but we also had less dollars invested in the digital library this year. So the more dollars you put in, the more usage it likely sees, and that's for all the reasons Jamie just described. One of the things worth noting here, too, is, you know, St. Michael actually did not see an increase in circulation year over year, which is interesting. They may have also reached their peak for physical circulation, but we're still seeing new people coming through the door. On page 31 is the way we've been measuring strategic plan progress over the last 5 years. Things of note that we haven't talked about is, you know, the idea that items per checkout session was a way we were measuring the success of going fines free 5 years ago. And we didn't actually see a major uptick in that, but something happened in September this year. We actually had a significant bump in September. So it's possible all of those new sign up for library card promotions did something or at least drove activity to the library. That's possible. Could be there was an, or it could be an extra Monday. Like you just don't always know on a month to month basis how things line up, but there was a little uptick there. We also 5 years ago, you know, said we were going to measure our success of going fines free with how we were collecting fines, but that budget line is also tied to print to go. And that budget line is still trending higher than it was a year ago because we're still seeing increase in activity in the use of wireless printing in our libraries. So that activity has actually replaced some of the dollars we would have collected in fines the way we were budgeting pre-pandemic. So those are the high points from our quarter three updates. The last page I was going to point out on page 32, we measured the number of people going to trainings each quarter. And you'll notice organizational orientation is that's the orientation new employees go to each year. We actually, in quarter three last year, had 24 employees. We only had 11 this year. That is a sign of the stability we're seeing in turnover since we've made all the changes in the way we staff over the past year. So we don't have as many new employees as we did a year ago, and that's a good thing. That means people are sticking around. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions for Karen?
I just had one question.
Yes, go ahead.
So I think one of the things we discussed in the strategic plan meeting was that the print to go would be a goal for us, that at some point we would go that to a certain amount for free too. Is that one of the still goals for us for the next strategic plan?
That actually segues really well into the next thing, which is the project evaluations. And one of those is for print to go. So do you want me to segue into that further?
Yeah, just go ahead.
All right. So with the project evaluations, we looked at both the open hours from 2022 and Print2Go. I'll talk about Print2Go first. And I included in the packet the evaluation sheets for both of those. For Print2Go, basically, just to back up, that's our cloud-based printing. So that basically means that someone can, from home, from work, from wherever, upload an item. It hangs out in the cloud for, I believe, 48 hours, and then they can come into a library, any one of our libraries, and print it. Or they can print from within the library as well. Either way, we have seen the use of that increase significantly over the last couple years. And so one of the things that in this evaluation that we looked at is what is working well. The actual thing works well. There's still a lot of questions from patrons, and staff have gotten better about answering those questions and knowing how to help patrons, especially those who don't know where a item is saved on their phone that they want to print or how to print an attachment or things like that. So the feedback from patrons has been almost completely positive. The recommendation from the public services team, which is the group that did this evaluation in whole, is to continue doing it and, if it possible, at some future point,
evaluate the feasibility of providing a certain amount of free prints for users with a Great River account in good standing. And that would do a couple of things. In addition to just increasing access for patrons, we think that would also create an incentive for people to have a library card in good standing. We just finished doing our count week in October, where we looked at how many people come to the library, how many reference type questions and things like that do they ask. And one of the things that we added this year was if someone came in and did printing asking, do you have a library card or do you not? Just so that we could try to gauge how many people are using that service who don't have a library card. And I don't have my final results yet, but for some locations it was like half, that half of the people didn't have a library card. And so if we could incentivize people to say, get a library card, and then you can get $2, $5 free prints every month, that or whatever that might be, that might help just increase for people the sense of, yeah, if I had a library card, I could do this. It also is something that Hennepin County has. And so in some of our southern branches, there can be a lot of that. If they can do it, how come you can do it? And that can be a little challenging. So we'll see. I think it's something to aim towards and say, if we can get there, that would be great. You know, at one point in time, we weren't sure we would ever be able to go fines free. And yet we figured out a way to do that and still have, you know, healthy financial situation. So, yeah, we'll see. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Area?
Yeah, so I did, in the evaluation there, I listed the public service team members who were part of this. Katie is one of them. We worked really hard on this, and just to try to really show that our public wants it. Like, if there is a serious growth industry within our public library, it is printing. It's been really interesting to see how use of public computers, like to come in and sign up for an hour to use a public computer, that's gone down, but the printing's gone up. So we've been able to do some analysis to be really smart about which public computer sites do we actually replace and which do we let just kind of go. And so thinking about how can we best use our funds in that way too. Any questions about Print2Go?
And as long as we're already on number 10, we want to talk about the additional open hours.
Yeah. So we also looked at open hours changes. And these some of you might remember that back in 2021, the board said, let's try having more open hours to increase access for patrons, to increase consistency of open hours. And so the patron services supervisors, myself, Kara, and Jeanette, we looked at the analysis of kind of how are our libraries doing, those that did have additional open hours. I will say patrons absolutely loved it, like, and cities loved it. They loved knowing that the library was open more. In places where it added consistency, that was really helpful for patrons. It did, in some places, result in an increase in use during those hours, in the public coming in or checking out, things like that. But it wasn't necessarily consistent. It wasn't necessarily consistent to where we could draw a line and say, make a generalization about it. And so, like, Jeanette or Kara, if you two want to jump in and say something, feel free at any time, because these were your branches too. But we weren't able to just say, this worked, or that worked, or if you do it this way, it worked. Jeanette says no.
I see a lot of minus signs here.
Yeah. And so it was also challenging to say, if it didn't work, why didn't it work? Go ahead, Kara.
This was really challenging to put together. One of the things I didn't bring with me today is my pack of heat maps. So each of us sat down and we're trying to figure out, what does the busyness look like at each of these branches throughout the day? So mapping checkouts. So basically, how busy is the branch at this point in time? And it was really interesting. In some of these, we could tell that those hours were some of the busiest hours of the day. So Sock Center is one of those. The 2 hours that they added, I believe it was Monday morning, are some of their busiest of the week. Other ones, it really, like, leveled off the schedule so that it was something that's more memorable, right? If the library is open on a more regular scheduled basis. And that didn't always, sometimes those were busy, sometimes they weren't. And so it was really kind of a grab bag. And a lot of it depends on that individual community and what the patterns of usage are in an individual community, where people are going to work, when they're driving back into town. Even similar libraries that I thought would be similar, I was really surprised to see different patterns of usage emerge. Okay. Yep.
So basically, after the three of us looked at it and tried to find different ways to change perspective to see if we could find those patterns, we kind of landed on, let's take this data, let's keep thinking about this, and next year when we, as a leadership team, work on our library development plan and look at all the different libraries and make recommendations for hours and things like that, just use this data towards that and review each library individually about what might be best for that. The exceptions to that is there's a couple of locations that staffing those extra hours just got really, really hard. So if we have a situation where we just can't staff the extra hours, then let's pull those back and try to do something else. And so, like Swanville, the open hours were removed this year, and next year we are looking at changing who, Kara?
Great Eagle. Yes, so another one of the smallest libraries. It's yeah, rather difficult to staff some of those.
Yeah. Okay. So you will see this information come back to inform that library development plan work that we will do next year. Okay. Any questions? Thanks, you two. I appreciate it.
That was a big yep on a Jeanette there.
Yes.
So, number 11, our year-end campaign.
Giving campaign.
And Brianna is going to do that.
So, I realized earlier when I was on the mic, I didn't introduce myself. My name is Brianne Fruth, and I'm the Communications and Development Coordinator. What is in front of you is our 2025 year-end campaign. So somehow it is already the end of the year, and we are entering into the library's biggest fundraiser, which is our year-end campaign. The year-end campaign goes towards the library system as a whole, and as you will see on the back side of that letter is things that those general dollars go towards. As a whole, it goes towards our collection enhancement. It goes towards programs, et cetera. It is 50% on the dollar goes towards collection, 25 goes towards program, and 20 goes towards communication, which essentially is the letters and donor communications that we have. It again is our largest fundraiser, and our goal is 100%. Board participation. This is significant because it not only shows our staff and our patrons that our leadership also supports the library, but it also can help us in grant applications as well. And last year, we amazingly first time hit 100%, and that was amazing, and we greatly, greatly appreciate you as a board member and your advocacy and support. Again, that dollar amount is based off participation. So whether you give $1 or $50, that goes towards that participation percentage. So please review the letter. Reach out to me directly if you have any questions, concerns. The options that donors can give are very popular cash and check, but you will also see on the backside many opportunities that people don't think about either, which is non-cash options, such as through your IRA as well. So again, please review those letters. There are the envelopes on the table as well, but if you would like to get it out of the way, I'm here this evening as well if you want to give this evening. So thank you.
Sorry, you must have something to say.
Oh, she's next month. Something. Next month.
Next month?
Okay.
Oh, I mean, Zuria, you can have the floor, but otherwise... No.
So I've been on the Fund Development Committee, and honestly, this was one of my goals to get the 100% vote participation. I've been on this board for 8 years. We've never had it, and last year was the first year we hit that. So I'm please imploring you, next meeting is my last meeting on this board, so 8 years. And so, yes, I'm done. So,
you get nine.
Not because of that. I know, but I have to, because I'm moving to the Twin Cities, so I resigned from my post.
Sure, I thought you were trying to bail out on us.
They were getting out, unfortunately.
They wouldn't let us, Stearns County Annex, where she's living.
So, I would really appreciate it if, as a farewell gift, I can have that feeling that we did the same thing again this year. Remember, no amount is too little. It could be $5. It could be a cup of coffee that you don't drink and instead donate to the library. So please, please really think about it and do something about it. Thank you so much.
We hope we can make Zuria's day before she finishes out her term here. So any other comments about? Yes.
Will you remind us about what kind of social media you're going to be doing about the end of the year so we've got ways that we can help?
Yes. So we will, starting in November, have it on our griver.org homepage. It'll go out in our newsletter if you subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter. And I will also have it on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So, yes, you will have opportunities to share.
I'm doing the pre-quest, which is just, and then remind us.
Yes.
Some of us may or may not remember.
You will be reminded.
We can reach out to.
Yes.
Okay, we remember.
Sounds good. So, let's all remember, let's make everybody's days, or is especially, otherwise she's coming to your house and going to knock on your door.
Right.
It's your last hurrah, so we have to get that 100% again. So, with that, our next meeting is November 18th. Is that correct? And we do have that at the end of the month, the Espresso meet and greet with Brandy, so I hope you have that on your calendars. It's not a mandatory thing, but Brandy would love to see your smiling face there and give you a cup of coffee or espresso. So with that, are there any other comments? Otherwise, I'm going to look for a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Laura, a second.
I'll say it's in November.
I'll second.
Okay, you pick. Stacey, you got it. Any other comments? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.